Okay, I hope everybody has the outline, and there's a couple maps. So if you don't have those, go ahead and run back there to the table and grab them. Last week I gave you a map and I forgot to refer to it, so I will try to remember to do that today. Take a look at my notes and make sure that we do that. The two maps are basically the same geographical area. Just one is going to show the route that Joshua and the people are going to take as they conquer the promised land, and the other one is more of a map that shows you the territory, where the tribes are going to have their land split up at the end of the conquering. But there's a part of that I want to refer to today. So what I want you to think about is, real quick, I'm going to say to you, think about somebody. Just let somebody pop in your mind, maybe a famous person. Think of somebody with great strength and courage. Here's the type of people who comes to mind maybe for you. Rocky? You know, Sylvester Stallone? No? Sue's shaking her head. That's not who I thought of. What about The Rock? Dwayne Johnson? No? He's kind of in the same category? Yeah. George Patton? World War II general, possibly? Maybe somebody more along this line, maybe like Rosa Parks, Rosa Parks came to mind. Anybody want to share just a couple other ones? Abraham, okay, yeah. Anytime you're leading a nation in such difficult times. Right, the Democratic guy in Congress or the House, right, that he tends to not just go along with what the people in his party want him to do. That's a good one.
David.
So, who? Oh,
David.
Yeah, the David in the Bible. Yeah. Let's go to the other side of the fence. Think about somebody, we won't go through examples, but think of somebody who doesn't have courage, somebody who you think maybe is kind of scaredy cat or a wussy. Yeah, you point to yourself. Here's who comes to my mind. The lion from The Wizard of Oz. That is like the quintessential, I just used a word, I'm not sure if that was even right. Quintessential? Yeah. Person that I think of when somebody who supposedly lacks courage. You know, we meet him at the beginning of the movie. He's in the forest and he's trying to intimidate the Tin Man, the Scarecrow, Dorothy, and the dog, and he's going around. Rah! And then shortly thereafter, Dorothy swats him on the nose. And immediately this supposedly brave and king of the forest starts crying and sobbing in front of the little girl, cute little Dorothy. Dorothy says, "My goodness, what a fuss you're making." "Well, naturally, when you go around picking on things weaker than you are, you're nothing but a big coward." And the lion says, "You're right, I am a coward. I haven't any courage at all. I even scare myself. Look at the circles under my eyes. I haven't slept in weeks." And the Tin Man says, "Well, why don't you try counting sheep?" The cowardly lion, "That doesn't do any good. I'm afraid of them too." So that's who comes to my mind. As we go through the first chapter of Joshua, we're going to hear the word strength and courage a lot. And I want to suggest that when we hear the word strength and courage in the book of Joshua, that it's not necessarily the same thing of this type of strength and courage that we just talked about. It's a little bit different. There's some subtle nuance that we'll get into. So last week when we introduced the book of Joshua, we talked a lot about the Israelites who escaped slavery from Egypt. They were there in the wilderness for 40 years, and they all died off because they, for sure, were short on strength and courage. They had been witnesses to God's miracles performed on their behalf, and they were sure glad for these miracles. But they were quite content to sit back and just let God take care of every difficult situation they found themselves in, as long as it didn't require much spiritual fortitude on their part. You might think, well, wasn't it scary for them to have to walk through that parted Red Sea, you know, across the muddy waters? You know, on the other hand, though, what choice did they really have? You had these Egyptians barreling down on them. You know what's going to happen if they catch you. Might as well go across. What do you have to lose? So there was not necessarily a huge amount of courage that they put forth in that situation. A year later, they were told to enter the Promised Land. Remember the story we read last week, where the spies went and they scoped out the land, And most all the spies came back and said, nope, this is going to be way too difficult. These people are scary. We don't want to do it. And the people said, yeah, you're right. We don't want to do it. We're not going anywhere. We're standing right here. In fact, we'd like to go back to Egypt. Let's grab a new leader. So they decided to remain on the outskirts of the Promised Land. Part of me wants to give them a little bit of a break, you know, because they were captives in Egypt for 400 years. And so they've known nothing but having to take orders from people and just being totally at the mercy of their leaders. So they weren't adequately prepared for battles ahead. But by their decision, they proved that they weren't capable of taking the Promised Land. So we get to Joshua chapter 1, and this is after the death of that generation that we talked about last week. So Joshua is going to be made leader of the Israelites. He's going to take up the reins where Moses left off, and the people are getting prepared to cross the Jordan River. So these people are going to not only learn what real strength and courage was and how to obey God in that context, but you're going to find that these people are committed to doing so. So we're going to go through the chapter. I'm going to do a little bit of jumping around because there's some important things that take place in the book of Numbers and Deuteronomy as well that we'll get into. So let's, if you haven't opened your Bibles, we're going to look first of all at Joshua chapter 1, verse 1. Let me start reading and then talk a little bit about it. So after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord said to Joshua, son of Nun, Moses' aide, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now then, you and all these people get ready to cross the Jordan River and into the land I'm about to give them to the Israelites. I will give you every place where you set your foot as I promised Moses. So the first point we're going through here is spiritual victory takes a good resume. I forgot to highlight in my notes the underlying portions that I gave you. So hopefully I say the words you're looking for. So the first thing under this fact that spiritual victory takes a good resume is we find that Joshua had a good mentor, and that mentor obviously was Moses. In Numbers 13:16, we actually learn that before Joshua's name was Joshua, his birth name was Hoshea. So Moses was the one that changed it from Hoshea to Joshua. So Moses had a significant amount of influence over Joshua's life in that sense. But we also learn in Numbers 11:28 that Joshua was an attendant of Moses from Joshua's youth. And if you look at timelines and do the math and things, basically that means that Joshua was an attendant or served under Moses during the entire time that they're in the wilderness. Okay, so he starts out, you know, as a younger person, and for 40 years he's Moses' aide. So that was the first thing. He was a mentor. He had a mentor named Moses. But he also, we learn, he had valuable experience. God just didn't throw somebody into the fire here who had no background. First thing to point out is, if you go back to Exodus, he led a victory over the Amalekites in a battle, one that God directed through Moses. That was a story where they had to hold Moses' arm up in the air. And whenever Moses' arm was up in the air, they were defeating the Amalekites. And Joshua was the one that was out on the battleground responsible for the battle itself. And they had victory there. Exodus chapter 24, we find that Joshua was somebody that actually went up Mount Sinai with Moses. So he at least went part way and was kind of I don't want to say bodyguard because he wasn't right next to him all the time, but he, you know, helped him out in that sense. We learned last week that at age 40, he was one of the 12 spies that they sent to explore the entire Promised Land. So he knew what was up there, and he knew the people that were up there. And also, the last point, he was one of only two of those spies to want to go into the land and take the Promised Land. So that was his experience. Spiritual victory takes leadership as well. We're going to go back and see what Moses said just before he died. So the first point under here is Joshua is going to become the leader because the people need one. People need a leader. So the events of Joshua becoming leader take place, or they start, before Joshua chapter 1 picks up. We learn about more of the background in the books of Numbers and Deuteronomy. So Moses learns from God that his death is imminent, And he also learns that he's not going to be able to go into the promised land. So Moses asks God to commission a new leader in his place. He knows the importance of having a new leader because he was the leader himself. So he asks God for somebody who would watch out for the welfare of the people and help conquer the promised land. And one other thing that we'll see here in the verse I'm going to read is Moses doesn't suggest who the leader is going to be. He just suggests that there's a leader. And so we go back to Numbers chapter 27, verse 15. Here's what Moses said. May the Lord, the God who gives breath to all living things, appoint someone over this community to go out and come in before them, one who will lead them out and bring them in, so the Lord's people will not be like sheep without a shepherd. There's only one who doesn't need a shepherd or savior of some kind, and that's God himself. Every person, every group that's ever lived throughout human history needs some kind of help. And these people, the Israelites that were going to go into the promised land, were definitely a group that needed leadership. God appoints a person for the job who's qualified. So in the verses immediately after what Moses requested, God says this to Moses, take Joshua, son of Nun, a man in whom is the spirit of leadership, and lay your hand on him. So there's the point where Joshua, we find out he's going to be the new leader. It was God's idea, not Moses's, to pick Joshua. And the reason he picks Joshua is because he has leadership ability. Obviously, God's seen what Joshua has done and knows Joshua's heart, so he picks Joshua. A little bit later in that same chapter of Numbers, God makes sure that everyone knows who this leader is going to be. God tells Moses to have Joshua stand before Eleazar the priest and the entire assembly and commission him in their presence. Give him some of your authority so the whole Israelite community will obey him. Moses did as the Lord commanded him. He took Joshua and had him stand before Eleazar the priest and the whole assembly. And then he laid his hands on him and he commissioned him as the Lord instructed. So in looking at that, you can see very clearly that the manner in which the appointment was made, there's no room for ambiguity. Who's going to be our leader from here on out? You know, there's not going to be a power play of people trying to struggle to get to the top and take over the role of leadership. They can see that it's Joshua. No questions asked. God also is the one to commission Joshua directly. So not only does he say to Moses, it's going to be Joshua, but God does it personally himself. Deuteronomy 31, the Lord said to Moses, now the day of your death is near. Call Joshua, present yourselves at the tent of meeting where I will commission him. So Moses and Joshua came, presented themselves at the tent of meeting. The Lord appeared there in a pillar of cloud, and the cloud stood over the entrance to the tent. So that's, you know, those verses there are all the things that led up to Joshua chapter 1, where Joshua is going to be made leader. It just hasn't had his first day on the job yet. So that's where we get to in Joshua chapter 1. It's essentially his first day on the job. So we just read verses 1 through 3. We'll pick up in verse 4. He tells Joshua on his first day on the job, your territory is going to extend from the desert to Lebanon and from the great river, the Euphrates, all the Hittite country to the Mediterranean Sea in the west. No one will be able to stand against you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will never leave or forsake you. Number 3, spiritual victory takes, but you can guess, strength and courage. Strength and courage. So when you read about the events that happened around the escape from Egypt, you recognize there wasn't a lot of time for preparation. It all happened pretty fast. And so there wasn't this lead time that they had where they knew that they were going to be leaving, you know, in X number of days or weeks or months and they're going to get prepared. You know, there weren't any stories of people doing physical training and, you know, running around with rocky music blaring over loudspeakers, getting them all psyched up, ready for what's about to happen. There's no exhortation whatsoever in Exodus chapter 6 where the people there are told to have strength and courage. Kind of interesting. And to obey God in order to guarantee success. Basically, they're told they're going to be escaping and they're going to have a land of their own. But we also read last week where they were a spiritually immature group of people and they didn't believe. There's verses in Exodus 13 after they've escaped where they start to set up some rules and ceremonies and sacrifices and things to help commemorate their escape. And so it looks like there's a lot of kind of cool religious stuff happening, you know, and they're becoming the community set apart that God wanted. But there's no evidence in there that the people were really having their hearts changed. There's no evidence that they wanted to know God deeply and be really committed to Him. You read about Moses, and he does so. He wants to know God deeply, so these things are important to him. But it's almost like the people were just kind of caught up in the pageantry and the tradition of what was going to be happening. And they took it all for granted. And, you know, that's proven that that was their mindset, because, you know, what happened every time difficulty came along? What are we going to do? You know, maybe like the lion from the Wizard of Oz. That's the way they acted. Every time they needed help, God bailed them out, essentially. They're referred to in Exodus 33 as a stiff-necked or stubborn people. And that word, one of the things that it conveys is you think of an oxen, you know, that pulls carts and things. If an oxen gets a stiff neck, he does that when he doesn't want to pull the cart. He wants to do his own thing, so he stiffens up his neck. And the farmer can't make the oxen do what he wants to do. The people back then, escaping Egypt, they desired escape, but they weren't prepared for victory in spiritual warfare. The generation who escaped slavery in Egypt was never exhorted to have strength and courage, not because they already had it, or even the fact that they had great willpower. I think they weren't exhorted to have it because they lacked the kind of strength and courage it was going to take to conquer the Promised Land right off the get-go. On the other hand, we're going to learn that the generation who is going to cross the Jordan River, they are exhorted to have strength and courage. It's kind of interesting. Not because these people were cowards and so they needed to have somebody tell them that, or that these people lacked willpower whatsoever, because they had a better grasp of what strength and courage really was, I think that's why the phrase is used on their behalf. So in Joshua chapter 1, we're going to see five occurrences of that phrase, be strong and courageous. But even these five were not the first times that these people are hearing this phrase. Again, we go back in Deuteronomy. Watch the progression of the way this phrase is handed down as we talk about these. All right, so we're going to go person to person. And we're also going to see it's used in different contexts, and I think that's important. So the first case where the phrase be strong and courageous is used is Moses saying it to the Israelites back in Deuteronomy chapter 31. Before he dies, he says, I'm 120. I'm no longer going to be able to lead you. He said to the people, I can't cross the Jordan, but the Lord is going to cross over ahead of you, and Joshua is going to be your leader. He's going to do that too. He's going to go across. He's going to deliver these people to you just like he did the kings that we just conquered, Sihon and Og. And he says, be strong and courageous. Don't be terrified because of the people that you're going to see, for the Lord your God goes with you. He will never leave you, forsake you. So here Moses uses it to the Israelites. He uses the phrase to ensure that they, to reassure them that they're going to have a leader, Joshua. They're not going to be floundering, you know, without a leader, and that God's power was going to be them. And in Moses' case here too, he reaffirms the importance of obedience when he uses the phrase, and he does it right after he brought all the there's some rules and regulations in the verses just before this that the people set up. Or that God sets up that the people have to obey. And so he says this right after that. So there's a definite connection with the obedience in this use of it. So the next time that we see it is Moses also uses it directly to Joshua. Moses summoned Joshua in Deuteronomy 31 and said to him in the presence of all Israel, be strong and courageous, for you must go with this people into the land that the Lord swore to their ancestors. The Lord himself goes before you, will be with you. He will never leave or forsake you. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. So here's where Moses is challenging Joshua himself directly. He's trying to build him up. You know, if you're going to bring on a new leader, especially somebody in Joshua's case, he's got good experience, he's got a good resume, but he's never done this before. So Moses is trying to build up Joshua, and he tells him, hey man, you're going to be facilitating military conquest. You're going to be taking over lands that, you know, other than the trip you made up there, you're going to be going in places you've never seen before. And you're also going to have to be responsible for helping grant ownership of the portions of the land to the tribes. So there's a lot of responsibility falling on this guy. So Moses reminds him that God would always be with him. The next time that we see the phrase "be strong and courageous," even before the book of Joshua, again, is in Deuteronomy 31. And this time, God says it to Joshua directly. He says, Joshua, be strong and courageous, for you will bring the Israelites into the land I promised them on oath, and I myself will be with you. So, very similar. This is God himself. Hey, you're going to be my military guy. You're going to be the conduit, essentially, by which the promise that I have made that the promise was made 600 years ago, you know? So here's this guy. Put yourself into Joshua's shoes. You are going to be the leader of a massive amount of people, and you're going to have a promise fulfilled under your watch that's been 600 years in the making. Holy cow. I don't know. I'm not sure if I could do it. But God says the phrase directly to Joshua. So now we come back to Joshua chapter 1, verse 6, and here we're going to see the phrase used some more. So now, obviously, this is after Moses has died. Joshua is now officially the leader, his first day on the job. Verse 6, be strong and courageous. This is God again speaking to Joshua, because you will lead these people to inherit the land I swore to their ancestors. I'm pretty sure, I tried to figure it out exactly, I'm pretty sure these are two different times when God said this to Joshua. He said it to him before he took official leadership, and now he's saying it to him after Moses has died. Be strong and courageous. And like I said, you and I, if you put yourselves in those shoes, he had to have been thinking, am I really qualified for this? Are you sure that I can do this? Verse 7, he uses the phrase again, be strong and very courageous. And then notice the words right after that. Be careful to obey all the law my servant Moses gave you. Do not turn from it to the right or to the left, that you may be successful wherever you go. Keep this book of the law always on your lips. Meditate on it day and night, so that you may be careful to do everything written in it. Then you will be prosperous and successful. So there, obviously, the use of the phrase be strong and courageous is in the context of being obedient to God. Joshua's obedience or disobedience was going to have a direct impact on his level of success. Verse 9, here we go again. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. For the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. So here God's warning Joshua, and rightly so, that yes, you're probably going to have to deal with real fear and real discouragement. Remember the discouragement that Moses felt, you know, when he was leading the people? In fact, there's stories where it became very evident that Moses was discouraged. In fact, one time he got so discouraged, he struck the rock out of anger, and that's the thing that caused him to not go into the promised land. So God's telling Joshua, you're going to be tempted to do the same thing when you get discouraged. Just don't do it. I'm going to jump ahead to verse 18 because I want to see this other use of the phrase. It's a little bit different use of the phrase here. So verse 18 in Joshua 1, whoever rebels against your word and does not obey it, whatever you may command them, they will be put to death. Only be strong and courageous. How many people pleasers do we have in this room? I mean, I'm one of them. You know, I like people to like me. I don't like conflict. Josh is being told that when people disobey, you might have to put them to death. Oh man, I don't know. If you're going to obey, I guess you got to obey. Joshua is most likely going to see people under his command fail, sin, you know, disobey. And how is Joshua going to handle that when that happens? Is he going to go out and get all mad and ticked off like Moses did at times? Is he going to be able to even go so far as to kill people, put them to death that do that? He needs strength and courage in that case too. Joshua uses the phrase to the people as well. So think back. So we've had Moses saying the phrase to Joshua. We've had God saying the phrase to Joshua, to the people. It's going all through the ranks here. And here's Joshua saying it to the people himself. And this is in verse 22 of chapter 10. And this, too, is in an interesting context. So what's just happened here, and I don't want to get too detailed because whoever speaks in this chapter in the future is going to talk about it, but there's a battle, and they take five kings hostages. Five kings hostage. And they stick them in a cave. And here's what happens. Joshua said, "Open the mouth of the cave and bring those five kings to me." So they brought them out. And names where the kings are from. When they had brought these kings to Joshua, he summoned all the men of Israel and said to the army commanders who had come with him, "Come here, put your feet on the necks of these kings." So they came forward and placed their feet on their necks. Put yourself in the shoes of those commanders. What is going to happen? Joshua said to them, "Do not be afraid, do not be discouraged, be strong and courageous. This is what the Lord will do to all the enemies you're going to fight." Then Joshua put the kings to death and exposed their bodies on the five poles, and they were left hanging on the poles until evening. So there's two things going on here. One is these people got to be strong and courageous because they're about to witness a pretty gruesome death of people right in front of them. You know, if you're somebody who doesn't like the sight of blood, you're going to need some strength and courage to witness this, right? But then he also uses it to show them that this is what's going to happen to the people that you're going to go against in this promised land. You're going to defeat them. You just got to do what I tell you to do. So lots of uses of the phrase. What I want to do is go back to verse 9 and highlight the fact that the strength and courage phrase, it's not a suggestion, it's a command. So that's very interesting. They're being commanded to have strength and courage. And I think the reason why they can be commanded to do this and not just, hey, buck up, you know, little buckaroo and go for it. These people have a better grasp of who God is. They're committed to his word. So they have a better sense of what true strength and courage really is going to be. They know that God is going to go with them, or at least that's what they've been told. So they believe these things. So for these people, they're not just being told to increase your willpower, you know. Don't be afraid like the lion, you know, be a Sylvester Stallone or whoever we said. Basically, they're being told, believe what I've told you and just go and do it. I'm not going to leave you. So you're just relying on the sovereign, all-powerful God. That's what you're doing. So that's what your strength and courage is in. It's in the fact that God is going before you. It wasn't strength and courage in and of themselves. He wasn't trying to elevate that. He can make it a command because, hey, if you believe God is who he is, well then, prove it. I thought of this phrase. So here's the people who say they have faith and are getting ready to go conquer the promised land. So they're actually going to do what the previous generation did not do. I just thought of the verse from James 26. Faith without works is dead. So these people, they're going to do some work, right? They're going into the promised land. They're going to do it. What did their ancestors do? Was there any work or acts on their part? No. And what happened? They ended up dead. You know, it's kind of a pun to a certain extent. Faith without works is dead. But think about it in those terms. You know, those people, they died. And now this group of Israelites is going to go in. Number four, spiritual victory takes teamwork. Joshua verse 10. So So Joshua ordered the officers of the people, go through the camp and tell the people, get your provisions ready. 3 days from now, you're going to cross the Jordan here to go in and take possession of the land that the Lord your God has given you for your own. I mean, it's not a lot being said here, but Joshua is organized. He's got a plan. He gets everyone involved. All right? It's not his battle alone. He makes sure that people know their role, and he's going to get everyone involved in this fight. Now, we get to verse 12, and there's some words here that may be a little bit confusing on what's being talked about, but I'll give you the backstory in a minute. So he says, verse 12, but to the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half-tribe of Manasseh, remember the command that Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave you after he said, the Lord your God will give you rest by giving you this land. Your wives, children, livestock, they can stay in the land that Moses gave you east of the Jordan, but all your fighting men ready for battle must cross over ahead of your fellow Israelites. You are to help them until the Lord gives them rest, as he has done for you, and until they too have taken possession of the land your God is giving them. After that, you may go until you have taken possession of the land the Lord your God is giving them. After that, go back, occupy your own land, which Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave you east of the Jordan. So here's one of the points where I wanted to refer to the maps. Can I borrow real quick? We'll do this one. So where we're at here, so if you're looking at your map, and you see at the bottom, it says the Dead Sea, and you can see Jericho right there just above the Dead Sea. So they're on the east side, which is the right side of the Dead Sea, where it says Reuben, Gad, Ammon. That, and then way up at the top, you see East Manasseh. So what has happened is, back in Numbers 32, the people, they were coming up from this right here with Moses, and they got to this point on this side of the Jordan River. The Jordan River runs between these two bodies of water. And they looked at that land, and they said, hey, this looks good for how we like to live. We've got cattle, we've got livestock, and all this kind of stuff. This land here looks good for our crops and all this type of thing. So we would like to have this land. And in Numbers 32, Moses says, well, wait a minute. We've got to go across the Jordan and conquer that over there on the west side. You guys can't just stick around here and, you know, take your land and leave the rest of your brothers empty-handed. So he makes them promise that they will go across the Jordan with everybody else. They'll conquer the land on the west side of the Jordan, and then only after that happens do they get to go back to the east side of the Jordan to occupy their land. So, help each other. Help out each other. Don't just think about yourself, but look around and find out if there's somebody else who might be in need of assistance in their spiritual battles. Help them out. Number five, spiritual victory takes commitment. Verse 16. So after all these things have been said, God to Joshua, Joshua to the people, here's how the people respond. Then they answered Joshua, whatever you have commanded us, we will do, and wherever you send us, we will go. Just as we fully obeyed Moses, so we will obey you. Now, let me stop you right there. Sometimes when you read this, you may get confused and think, well, wait a minute, these people disobeyed a lot. Remember, the people who disobeyed a lot, they're dead. So these people here, they were in the wilderness waiting 40 years for this event to unfold. So they're not the ones that were known as the disobedient ones. So they say, we're going to obey you. Only may the Lord your God be with you as he was with Moses. So I like what they say here, too. They're helping out Joshua, okay? They probably recognize, hey, this guy who's going to be our leader, he's got a tough job, so let's help him out, too, and give him some encouragement to say, we're behind you. We have your back. Whoever rebels against your word, Joshua, and does not obey it, whatever you may command them, will be put to death. So they are understanding the severity of what happens when disobedience may or may not occur. And then how do they respond? The end of verse 18, only be strong and courageous. That's really neat how they in turn use that same phrase. So they know how they're supposed to live. They know how they're supposed to fight. And they know what lies before them. They respond in confidence and commitment to the leadership. And they are committed to doing so. I decided with the so what, rather than make you fill in a bunch of blanks, plus I didn't know how much time I was going to have on my hands, I just wrote out the so what's for you. And we're only at 11:04, so I think I can go through these pretty quickly. You're thinking, yes, you can. You talk really fast, Mark. The first so what. Make sure that those you are watching and learning from are indeed good mentors. Before I go on, there was something I was meaning to say earlier, and you probably are well aware of this. This whole concept about conquering a promised land, you can see that there's a real close parallel, you know, to our lives as believers. It's kind of in multiple layers here. Each of us personally have a promised land that we're supposed to be conquering. You know, it's what you are dealing with in your life. You know, the things, the enemies and the sin in your life that you need to root out. So that's one sense of it. But also, we're as a group, we're kind of in it together. You know, we have our little fellowship here, and then even the body of Christ as a whole. You know, we're kind of in this thing together. But then also, there's a promised land that they're waiting, that we're waiting for, that's in heaven. Okay, so as you think about the things that we're learning here, think about how they apply to all those different situations. Okay, so this first one, make sure that you personally are watching and learning from good mentors. Okay, because for your personal promised land that you're trying to take over, sometimes we need mentors. Another thing, prepare yourself for future spiritual service using whatever opportunities arise. Don't wait till all the right circumstances come into play, you know, where you've got everything all laid out in your mind how you want your spiritual life and spiritual service to occur, and you're going to wait for that opportunity. All right, God, I'm having faith in you, God. I'm waiting on you, God. I'm waiting on you, God. I'm waiting on you, God. If there's something that is there, step in and do it, you know? That's how you gain experience. That's how you increase your faith, even if it makes you feel uncomfortable. In the war for your personal promised land, you don't need the blessing of another person either, all right? You have the authority that you need already. God says, you know, I've given you authority. You have my son, Jesus. You have the Holy Spirit. I'm giving you my blessing. You don't need to wait for a pastor or a priest or whoever to say, all right, go ahead and do your thing. Take responsibility for your own spiritual life. Number four, don't go about spiritual warfare alone. You know, communicate with people. Be organized in what you do and get people involved, whether it's getting them involved with your personal life or getting them involved, you know, as we do here or whatever it is. And then here's a scary one sometimes. Don't be afraid to challenge people or encourage them and hold them as spiritually accountable. We find it easy to pat each other on the back, you know, but to spank them on the butt is a whole different thing, isn't it? So do that sometimes. And then number six, this is probably the most important one. Have the kind of strength and courage that God commands. So there are a lot of people who like to give the impression that they're strong and courageous. In fact, sometimes people leave and quote Philippians 4:13, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. But they only believe the first five words, I can do all things. You know, it's the other part, they say it, but they really don't mean it. You know, it's more of a focus on what they can do. People who are not strong and courageous, I'm giving some characteristics. This is my opinion. People who are not strong and courageous, my opinion from Scripture. They make quick reactions based upon superficial information. So that's what the spies did, right? Quick reactions based upon the height of these people and things like that. They exaggerate. People who are not strong and courageous in the right sense, they exaggerate things. They make blanket statements. And they change the narrative to help align with their weakness. Again, if you go back to the spies, they said some things that were not necessarily true. They were trying to convince the people that they were talking to, hey, you don't want to go into this land because these people are really big, you know, and they make us look like grasshoppers. It's kind of an exaggeration. People who are not strong and courageous, they focus on the wrong things for the wrong reasons. They boast about their own strength, and they make up stories about opponents' weaknesses. All right, so somebody that they're butting heads with, they'll say lies and tell stories and make them seem like someone they're really not. And the sad thing is they know they can do all this, and nobody holds them accountable. They can get away with acting that way. And some people believe they're strong and courageous, but when you look at the strength and courage in the Bible, they don't have it. You know, obviously, you know, you think of political leaders, that's one example, but there's a lot of them like that. People with real strength and courage, here's what Paul did. He boasted in his weakness. He boasted in his weakness. Just the opposite of what goes on in this world. The strength and courage in this generation of Israelites was in their understanding that any success one has is because of God's strength, not theirs. So in other words, if you want a good way to measure someone's strength and courage, look at how much humility they have. There you go. Show me your humility, and then I'll have a better idea of how strong and courageous you really are. And I'm not sure if I had this in your notes, but Philippians chapter 2 is a good chapter that talks about that. It talks about how Jesus himself became humble. And it gives the impression that becoming humble when he didn't need to, in a sense, that was a sign of real strength and courage. And then the last thing, you will be victorious after being strong, courageous, and obedient. I'm not going to read it, but I thought a really neat, I called it benediction in my notes. Write down Deuteronomy chapter 30, 11 through 20. Deuteronomy 30, 11 through 20. So to me, when I read that, you know, after studying and this and having it, you know, kind of speak to your heart, go back and read these verses in Deuteronomy 30, 11 through 20. It's kind of like a pep talk. It's like it all kind of comes together. You can kind of see what's happening there in Deuteronomy chapter 30. It would be a great way for some, you know, a pastor to stand up here and say, hey, boom, here's what we're going to do. That's what that is. So what we're going to do today is we're going to close with a song instead. I'll leave you to read Deuteronomy chapter 30.